This is Talk To Me with your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Talk To Me, powered by NotFest.com. The guest this week is KK Downing, formerly of Judas Priest, now of KK's Priest, on to talk about Sermons of the Sinner, which will be out August 20th. And if you're a Judas Priest fan, you are in for a treat. This was such a fun interview, and if you want to check out the video of the interview, make sure to head over to NotFest.com. Become an exclusive member of the NotFest community. It is $6 a month or $50 for the year. You get so much great stuff. Priority access to Slipknot headline shows, NotFest festivals, the NotFest Roadshow, NotFest present shows, unique VIP experiences, and so much more. And you will also get content from my Twitch stream on NotFest, which is Throwback Throwdown with Toomey. So much great stuff over there right now. We have my wonderful interview with Sunny Sandoval of POD, the full interview with Morgan Lander of Kitty, Fernanda Lira of Crypta, my full Dino Cazares episode is all over there in video form on NotFest.com. So make sure, hit up NotFest.com, become a member, let them know that the Talk To Me podcast sent you, and that would be much appreciated. So yeah, a lot of big stuff going on over here. As we've said at the beginning of this episode, I've joined up with NotFest on the NotFest official Twitch. After the first show of the NotFest official Twitch, they're like, hey, we need to bring Talk To Me over to NotFest too. So I'm now fully under the NotFest umbrella. And this was something that I've been trying to get into since NotFest kind of went from just a destination site for just the festival. When they started, kind of at the beginning of the pandemic, they started doing more of a media company. Ryan J. Downey doing a lot of stuff. Clown does the Electric Theater over there. They've now got Hellbent for Metal and the Downbeats over there. And there's just a great journalistic community going on. And I wanted to be a part of it since day one. Took a little while, but once I got my foot in the door, I kicked the door down. And now here we are. Talk To Me, a part of NotFest.com. And if you're new to the show, thanks for coming to check it out. If you've been with the show since day one, what a wild ride this has been. If you've been listening to all of my podcasts, you know how amazing of an interview getting KK Downing on the podcast is. As always, follow me on Twitter at ToomeyToomey. Follow the show at TalkToomeyTalk. Facebook is facebook.com/TalkToomeyTalk. Search me out on Instagram. You can even find the show on TikTok. So reach out, say hello if you're new to the show. You've got about over 300 episodes in the archives to go check out while you're here. And without any more of my ramblings, let's check out Hellfire Thunderbolt from KK's Priest. Talk to the man himself, KK Downing. And then I will talk to you guys momentarily. Let's welcome KK Downing to the Talk To Me podcast, the great, the legendary KK. How are you today?
Very, very good, Josh. Thank you for having me on this wonderful podcast that you have.
Well, thank you so much, man. And we're here to talk about KK's Priest, Sermons of the Sinner, out, I believe, August 20th. One thing I get from the album is that it kind of seems like a love letter to the fans. Am I wrong in that? There seems to be a lot of fan appreciation in that.
That's exactly right. That's very astute of you, Josh. I'm impressed because, you know, yeah, there is a lot of meaningful things, obviously, involved and surrounding this album, you know. Yeah, I'm very happy that you spotted that, and I hope the fans will as well, because it's a multitude of things, you know. Awareness, of certain things, and a rejoicing of certain things, lots of things, like I say, lots of emotional things and that. But first and foremost, obviously, the idea is to make a kick-ass record that rocks out.
Oh, and it definitely does that. You know, with the lyrics on this, I mean, was this something that you gave ideas to Ripper to write about, or were these things, you know, did you write lyrics on this? How did the lyrics come about?
Yeah, I did. The story is that I played a couple of short and quick shows in England in 2019, and the last one was November 2019, and that was the one that Ripper performed at, and Les Binks. And after that, I thought that really I'll try one last time and see if the door's still open to the previous band, and they said no, it's permanently closed. So I thought Christmas is just about to happen, and I'm not that big on Christmas, you know. It's kind of, you know, I get a little bit bored, so I thought I'll sit down and see if I have an album in me, you know, because I'd always written before with partners, and I thought, well, you know, I don't want to embarrass myself and form a band and say, okay, and then sit down and suddenly the well is dry, you know, writer's block, it doesn't happen. You know, I was quietly confident, but not certain, you know, so I thought, I'll sit down and see what happens. And so I started to put the music together, which came together very, very quickly. But I didn't really know if there were going to be songs, you know. So I had to work on some lyrics and melody ideas, you know, to make sure that the task could be completed. And, of course, you know, we were all kind of disjointed and spread out across the world. So I was kind of on my own, just in my own world doing that. But when I was doing, I got more enthusiastic, more into it. I'm thinking, this is like a bit of magic here, you know. I mean, you know, I'm working on my own, and I can do this. And so I just kept on going. And in 4 weeks, there were some pretty decent completed demos there, you know. And I didn't know how many songs or how much material I would need. But I carried on. And then suddenly one day I put it all together and timed it. And it came into about 50 minutes, which was just probably a bit more than I was aiming for, really, because I'm not overly keen on albums these days now that are too long. I think it's a bit too much, you know. So it went really, really well. I thought, that's it. I could put the band together. It's a bit like the Blues Brothers, right?
Right. I know that your writing process in Judas Priest was, you know, you would write on your own, Glenn would write on their own, you know, Rob would write on his own, and then you guys would kind of come together and see what you guys had. So with KK's Priest, with it all kind of being on you, was there a lot of pressure there for you to kind of, you know, make a good album and live up to the Priest name?
I didn't feel any pressure, really, because I kind of very... I guess I was being a bit smart, really, because I was doing everything behind closed doors. Nobody could see, nobody could listen, you know. And if it was total crap or it didn't happen, nobody would know I even started anyway. I was being a bit sneaky. But it just happened really, really fast, you know, and I'm already putting stuff down for the next record. So I'm really pleased with myself. And already I know that there's another record there, you know. I didn't want to start and then we would kind of get a bit stuck, do you know what I mean? And so I just needed to know that it was there, Josh, really, you know, and everything else was plain sailing, really, you know.
And obviously Ripper being Ripper, you know, how quickly did you say, hey, let's do a band, you know, after the last show, or, you know, when you had some songs together, when did that come together?
Yeah, I don't know. I think the guys were waiting for me to just basically say, you know, shall we do this? You know, and but I couldn't do that until I know that I was still you know, because I was still very good at doing this kind of thing, you know. And it was different because before I would just put musical ideas together, Glenn would, as you quite rightly say, and we would get together. And I never liked that feeling of Glenn saying, oh, no, I don't like this or I don't like that. And I'm thinking, okay. You know, I was always pretty, you know, there was a process that we did. We all had to agree what to use, you know, whereas now, if I like it and I think it's good, I just do it. I just say, and the guys are totally on board, you know, and I think they trust me. And because obviously there'll be much more of a collaboration on the next album, which is good. But to get us going this time, I had to do that. And, you know, and it was good for me to do it as well, you know. It was good. It was a good exercise to go through.
How did you like the freedom of not having Glenn there to kind of just say, hey, you know, you're going to do the rhythm tracks and do a solo here and there, you know, to where now you get to make those decisions?
Yeah, I liked it. You know, I get to play, you know, more lead parts as much as I want. Having said that, it's 50-50 down the line with me and AJ. You know, that's great. Mm-hmm. Where it wasn't really like that in Priest. You know, I think I should have done more because I can do it.
What have you been doing the last 10 years or so? You know, you've been out of the Priest for 10 years and now you come back with this ferocious album.
I'll say that, you know, everything came to a head in 2010, at the end of 2010. A lot of things were going on. Rob was on a world tour that year with in Peru, the Ozfest and stuff with the Halford band playing Priest stuff. He released two studio albums that year. You know, then we were all about to embark on a tour that would be the end of the band. So we all agreed to retire. and then with being forced to make a five-track EP, I was a bit pressured, you know, that was going on. I said, I'm not doing it. And I think, you know what? I'm not doing the final tour either. I'm just, you know, it all seemed not right. I don't know. But anyway, maybe I had some kind of breakdown, I don't know, some head explosion. And that's what happened, really. But a lot of people don't know. A few months later in April, I started to change my mind. And a friend of mine was really encouraging me, saying, you're going to the last tour. You've come this far. You're going. I think, you know what? I think he's right. So I told Ian, I was talking to Ian for about a week, you know, about it. And I was fully expecting that the feedback would go back to the other guys who I did upset with my second letter. But
yeah, the second letter was pretty tough, KK.
Not really. It was the truth. It was how I felt. Yeah. I sent the first letter in and I didn't mean any of it. And I felt like I was really prostituting myself, if that's the right terminology. I felt as though I was being, you read the second letter in my book, right? Well, okay. I eventually, you know, threw my toys out the pram. And we all do it, don't we? I mean, you know, but that was only because, I mean, I said to Ian, they sent me over the press release while I was talking to Ian about doing the tour, saying that we're going to do the press release tomorrow, saying you've retired, which was in my first letter. And so I called Ian and I said, can you send me the set list over? And he sent me the set list over. And I felt absolutely sure. But Ian wasn't really saying what my mate was saying to me. I was expecting, come on, Ken, you know, we've come this far. Me and Ian went to junior kindergarten together.
Oh, wow.
And it was a long journey. It was very heartbreaking. And I had the feeling that something was going on. And even if I said I really wanted to do it, I think it was too late. I think they'd already made the friendship and the relationship with Richie and things were going sweet. And the very next morning after I asked Ian for the set list, they released the press release saying that I'd retired, which was in my first letter, and my explicit instructions, forget everything, ignore everything in my first letter. This is what I really think.
Right.
Here's the real reasons. So, but no, they told the world and the fans and the press unfairly that I'd retired and continued to say that he's retired to look after his golf course Not true. I had professional managers looking after that. It had been open for 6 years already anyway, but it took the heat off them, which was unfair on me because it just made me look bad, you know, to the fans. It wasn't fair. But anyway, so that's all water under the bridge now, like I say, and I'm really proud of this record. I really
absolutely
hope the fans, I feel sure that the fans are really going to like it. I'm sure, you know.
Now, will you tour KK's Priest?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We had some shows booked last year, and we had some shows booked this year, but they've all cancelled. So, obviously, we've got lots of requests for next year, and let's hope that goes ahead. You know, if not before, we'll definitely be on the road, I'm sure, because things seem to be getting better, I hope.
And the set list will be Ripper's Era, Judas Priest, you know, Judas Priest Classics plus KK's Priest.
You've got it in one. What, you know, the fans, we'll go with the feedback. So there'll be lots of, obviously, Judas Priest stuff that never got played that I always fancied playing, you know. And obviously some Ripper Era. You know, obviously KK's Priest, we can play a combination of everything. And this is all about, because like I say, it's all a bunch of silliness, because like I'm 17 years old this year, and you know, if this is the last thing that I ever do, I'm going to be extremely proud of it and glad that I did it, and I am, you know. Now that this has happened, I'm really glad that it's happened, because you know, this is me under my own steam with good people, and we'll go out there and have a lot of fun with it, you know. And Leslie's going to be joining us, guesting with us. And like I say, wherever we travel in the world, if someone really wants to come up and special guest with us, this is about, it's too late in the day to, you know, not enjoy what we have left, you know. And these messages are there in the album, as you hit on it, really. You know, there's lots of things. This music that we know and love, that we've coveted and we've taken with us, you know. Not so much you, mate, because you're pretty young. You know, people nearer my age, you know, we take our music with us. We've been on this journey. We've lived a life together. Our music has held us together, you know, and that's what this record is all about. There's lots of... And at some point, I would like to provide an explanation of exactly the meaning and the motivation for each song. Even Hellfire Thunderbolt, it has a storyline to it. It does, and I would like to. I will go to lengths to give my interpretation of what was in my mind when writing everything. I think that would be a really cool thing to do. You know, hopefully the fans would like that.
Well, I think the one thing that when I picked up on that in the lyrics about the fandom, and the one thing in your book that I really noticed is you've always been a fan. Like, you've been a fan of music since you were a kid. You're a fan of music today.
That's in the song Metal Through and Through, at least maybe more songs, but definitely in that song. And where he says that, you know, we stand there, you know, united we stand, you know. And it, like you said, I'm a fan too. I go to concerts as a fan, you know, and I love that. And I always loved being a fan, you know, going to see all my favorite bands when I was a teenager and everything. There's nothing like it, you know, but I still do that. So I'm just as much as a fan as a musician. But when we play live, just because I'm on, you know, and because there's going to be lots of musicians in the audience, but if people are just fans of music, it's the same thing. We are as one, and that's what that song is all about. And we don't care if people think we're old-fashioned. We don't care if they think our music is outdated. This is a very, very special genre of true and classic metal, you know, that started in the 60s, more or less finished sometime in the 90s and went on to other things. You know, don't get me wrong, there's still bands out there carrying the flag. But also the message also in the song Sermons of the Sinner is enjoy these bands, even if they're fragmented, they're just remnants of those special decades, rejoice and enjoy them while we can, you know, before the dinosaurs of those decades finally fade into oblivion, because we're losing too many good friends, far too frequently. And it's just bringing about, an awareness of that, really. And I hope the record, another message is in there, and also in that song, that people, young musicians, will like this record. And it's so wonderful to see. I have seen someone, playing Hellfire Thunderbolt, as best he can. Valiant job there on YouTube. I love it. I love it. So yeah, but he's probably half my age, and that's great to see, because I always thought, because at one point, there was a younger Judas Priest, I think, in bands like, Iron Maiden and Saxon, maybe, that had the influence, but after those great bands, it kind of stopped. So why don't we have a young Deep Purple or a younger Black Sabbath or a younger Scorpions, Judas Priest? It would be great to see that, and I think that the band Greta Van Fleet, they're not Led Zeppelin, but that kind of tribute, but with new material, right. There's a freshness about it, and it gives us something from the past, but also from the present,
The one thing that you said in your book, and it's actually a question I ask a lot of band members, is, when was that time that you saw a band on stage and then later played that venue, or when did you know that you first made it, kind of thing? And you talked about, seeing Jimi Hendrix and then later Judas Priest playing the same clubs, and you're standing in the same spot Hendrix was standing. And, even in my limited band days, it was like, I remember going to see bands and then my band getting big enough to play that club, and you get to walk on stage and stand where your heroes once stood. I always thought that was awesome in the book there.
Yeah, it's an absolute, it's an honor and a privilege, if I could do that or win the lottery, I would rather do that,
Right.
It's so, like I say, seeing Hendrix at those venues, and when I actually got there, playing stage right as he did, it's just the weirdest feeling. Because when I saw him, I wasn't even a player, I went out and bought a cheap, in 1967, I went and bought a cheap acoustic for £10, just on the street, because I just had to have the thing in my hands, But people have said that about me, and that's like AJ, that's in KK's Priest now, the guitar player. He saw me with Ripper on, I think it was a Jugulator tour in Birmingham, and he said the same thing happened to him. He wanted to do that, and even recently I was speaking to Mantis from Venom Inc., and he's been extremely successful, playing the world's biggest stages, and. He said he saw me at Newcastle City Hall in England, in the north of England, and that happened to him. The same thing that happened to me with Jimi Hendrix. So hopefully when we play, this will inspire a lot of younger musicians to think, I wanna write songs like Hell for the Priest and Hellfire Thunderbolt and Sermons of the Sinner and all of that, and all of those songs. That would be great if they can be inspired. Doesn't have to happen, but I'm going to be up there enjoying playing those songs anyway.
Now, with the riffs on KK's Priest, these songs, are any of these riffs that you've had laying around for 15 years, or are these all new? Where are we at with that?
I have an eternal catalogue of song ideas, Some of the stuff has been presented to Priest and not approved. Some of it never got presented. So you always go back to it, because sometimes ideas are like ahead of the time, or they're either in front or behind. I assume you're probably a guitar player, Josh, I'm guessing.
I play bass, yeah.
You play bass. Well, you might have a similar sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I'd use just a few ideas there, a few parts, But most of it was just new stuff that I just sort of tagged on to lyrical ideas, you know. So I like to think, if the songwriters out there wanted to know how to do it, a great way is to have, you know, a main chorus lyric, whatever that might be, and then think of a way to deliver it and try to use phonetically strong lyrics like, you know, Hellfire, Thunderbolt, right. Strong lyric, you know, it's like breaking the law, you know, it's going to deliver strong, isn't it? Or whether it's, you know, hell breaks loose because we're wild and free, you know, you can deliver that with passion and energy or and meaning, you know. And then you can have a lead up sub chorus leading to that, you know, lyrically, if you've got an idea. And then that brings about ideas for verses. Obviously, a lot of it's, you know, juggling things about. But like I say, I was quite astonished as to how quick this whole thing happened, really, the music and the concept for, you know, for the songs. But the main thing is when you've got something strong and it sounds good and it's great, try to develop a meaning for the fans and yourself, you know, and something that's kind of poignant and relevant. And that's going to help you with the rest of the lyrics and the rest and to put the rest of the music together and the song.
You know, there's one thing in the book that kind of caught me was your take on Iron Maiden, which I thought was funny. But the only question I really have for you is, you know, so many years later, you know, now when people talk about heavy metal, they'll always go Priest, Maiden. Like, it's like, there's always like a list and it's always Priest, Maiden. So now, so many years later, how do you feel about kind of being synonymous with Iron Maiden when it comes to like metalheads talking about metal?
You know, I would have to say I really appreciate the fact. Well, I appreciate the mighty Iron Maiden because, you know, obviously being British, you know, Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, Black Sabbath, you know, Saxon, whatever. And, you know, when you think about it, there's really not enough. There should have been a lot more, you know, coming through on the back of those bands. You know, so maybe that time will come again, because we always hear about the new wave of British heavy metal, which apparently Iron Maiden and Saxon, Def Leppard were, you know, but we don't have the new wave, you know. We had the one wave, or we may have been the first, let's say, the second, those guys, but where's the third, you know? Congratulations to those guys for being, you know, ginormous and obviously, you know, total respect. And but I must say, you know, commend, you know, those guys for their work ethic. Boy, they just go round and round. where do they get their energy from? I've done a lot of it, you know, but those guys, you know,
I love the human element of the, even though you kind of talked a little bit about them being kind of pains in the butts back in the day, you know, you also talked about a little bit of, I'll say, jealousy with, you know, the marketing and the Eddie and the stage, you know, all of the things that come with Iron Maiden that Judas Priest didn't get. And I think it's humanizing to you for someone to be in such a huge band to still kind of see something like that.
I think, you know, I have to say that Iron Maiden got an awful lot of things right, you know, where we got some things not so right, I guess, you know, but I'm still immensely proud of the success we had and what we did, you know. I mean, just things like we were fairly eclectic, really, with albums. We would kind of do some U-turns and stuff, you know, and try to, you know, because we always felt in the early days it was our duty to widen the band spectrum of the fan base for metal, you know, because we could do songs like, for example, Blood Red Skies or Living After Midnight. You know, that's an extreme boundary there of metal, but it fits, and there's an awful lot in between, you know. So we were always not exactly experimenting, but just maybe pushing the boundaries, maybe a little bit too far sometimes, maybe for some of the fans. And so we had a fan divide where some fans liked this Judas Priest and some fans liked this Judas Priest, like the darker side or the more rock side, you know. Because in the early days, you know, bands like us couldn't get gigs, you know, we couldn't get record contracts, we couldn't get gigs. So we had to be more flexible with our material, you know. But I think when bands like Iron Maiden came along, they kind of knew their, you know, their direction.
The blueprint, yeah.
Yeah, and kept it there. And that element of consistency as well with bands like the Mighty AC/DC and various bands, you know, that works really, really well, you know, so that element of consistency and also the consistency of just going out year after year as well, you know, and working really, really hard. I mean, we did two albums, studio albums in 1 year in 79, something like that. And we did an awful lot of touring, you know. But yeah, I'm mighty proud of where we're at, you know, with metal, but we just could do with a lot more bands as well.
You know, the one thing too that obviously Judas Priest got the luxury of is having multiple records out kind of before the major stuff hit, you know, because nowadays a band will get a record out, and if it doesn't hit the first week, they're dropped and, you know, you never hear that band again. But, you know, Judas Priest didn't really hit until albums 4, 5, 6, you know, and really got to go out on the road and learn how to be a band and learn how to write and record. And, you know, you got to learn all those things where a band today doesn't really get that. You know, do you see that in bands these days?
Yeah, exactly. It is tough. Like you say, we worked hard. We were going up and down the motorway for like 10 years, doing loads and loads of gigs, pubs, clubs and stuff like that. You know, it took us a long time to get a record deal. And when we did, it seemed like almost we were starting again, you know, because we were supposed to be this professional recording outfit, you know. But we thought that we were really good. We were good, a good live act, you know, and everything was good about us. There was a uniqueness about what we were doing, you know, and but it all really didn't click until we became more uniform. And actual fact, until we actually put on the metal uniform, you know, the leather and studs, really, you know, when that happened, you know, it all seemed to come together for British Steel. I think we had a really cool album cover with a razor blade. We had the material, the album, which all came together in about a month. And it was the first time we all went out in leather and studs, and the bike came along, and it seemed to, like, heavy metal, you know, was born at last. And I was so happy. I mean, I'd been wearing leather and some studs since 1976, you know, but, you know, we were very eclectic looking, you know. But I really felt that we were not, there was incompleteness. The music was good. I like that. I like how everything was going and everything. But then it all seemed to come together in 79, 80, and the rest is history, I guess.
Right. Well, I think a lot of bands could use that time on the road and time in the studio and time just getting everything together, because most bands these days, like I said, have to nail it album one, single one, you know, first week, yeah. And it's so nuts.
Yeah, and, you know, the question you asked me, you know, is I would say to the bands, don't think you've got it all right. It'll take you, and even experienced bands get things not right, and then you have to, like we talked about Iron Maiden with their management getting things right, and, you know, like you said with the Eddie, that was a really cool thing to do, and obviously the band going out there and being a people's band, getting that right, you know, where sometimes priests, we put ourselves up there because of the theatrics and the showmanship and all of that. You know, it was very, very glitzy at times, but it was a lot of fun, and it was very, you know, what it was kind of the done thing, you know. So, you know, you have to keep working at it. Keeping a band together is really hard. Getting, you know, when you've got everything right musically, you get the way that you look, you know, and your stage performance and everything, then you've got to get the business side of it right as well, you know, get the right people behind you. And I don't think I never made a dollar until I learned, I think, you know, Glenn, I'll agree with this as well, until we learned a bit more about the business ourselves, you know, instead of relying on other people to tell us what the business, how the business works and what the norm is, you know, because you have to be sure of that yourself, you know. So, yeah, it's tough. It's tough, but all I can say is, guys, go out there, keep practicing and keep working at it. And, you know, but as Dave Lee Ross said, there's three rings to a marriage, the engagement ring, the wedding ring, and the suffering, right?
Too funny.
You know, it is a marriage, so be aware, you know.
I know we're coming up on time, but I do have a couple more questions that kind of pertain a little bit more to the book, questions I had about the book. One is, you obviously grew up, you know, quote unquote, dirt poor and just really, you know, struggling, and your dad was not very good with money and all that stuff. When was the moment in Judas Priest when you got the check or you saw the bank account where you went basically like, holy shit, you know, I'm good?
Well, there was, like I said, I had my first, like most teenagers get like some old cheap banger, we call them, for about £50 or $100. Right. You know the car, I mean.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Go to college with or whatever. I got my first one of those when I was 27 years old.
So crazy.
And it actually was £50.
And, so was it the car that you know, made you feel like you made it, quote unquote, made it?
Well, you know, I think we got lucky with a record which was called Take on the World, off a record in 1979, and it gained single success in the UK, and we got to do a national kind of, it's actually called Top of the Pops, right. you know. Bands back then, we hated going on there, but I'm sure Iron Maiden have been on there. I know Saxon was on there. They did it the one time we were on there. But when we did it, the Osmonds were on there as well. So
nice.
So, but anyway,
yeah.
You know, it's one of those shows that you have to do because you thought of the exposure. And the thing is, the more exposure we got as a heavy metal band, we thought we were doing heavy metal music a good service, you know. So, yeah, we did it. And I think it actually sold something like 400,000 singles because that, you know, singles was a big thing, you know, mm-hmm. in the charts in those days, in the 70s, late 70s. It was a long time ago. And so, yeah, we went from there and we started to make a bit of money at last, really, and we were successful with the British Steel album. And that was probably the point where I thought that, yeah, that we've made it, you know.
And the other moment in the book that I read part of it and then I listened to the rest of it because I knew I had to get through it. And so I was listening to it in the car and, you know, you meet Carol at a young age. You're with Carol for a while, but then you don't talk about Carol in the book. So I assume she's gone. And then you go on to talk about, you know, life on the road and groupies and sex and just, you know, multiple women, things like that. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Carol pops back up. And I'm like, Carol's still here? Like, you know, it was so funny to me that she kind of stuck around through all that. And it kind of popped up like six albums in that Carol pops up again.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, I'm one of these like failed girlfriend guys. Right. I've had a lot of girlfriends. You know, yeah. And, a lot, a lot of relationships, you know, on and off and stuff like that. And, I guess I was just like, you know, I just couldn't be lassoed, you know, and brought to the altar, you know, because I was going around the world too many times. I didn't think it would be fair to anyone to make commitments, promises up. I didn't know if I could keep, you know, so I'm sorry about all of that. but it is so, and I'm still here now, you know, and, you know, so still here. But like I say, it's kind of good in one way, you know, to have these voids where you're not in a relationship, you don't have a girlfriend, you kind of want one, but you know that. The guitars are there saying you need to pay some attention to me. You know, let's make some music together. So I always have that pressure on me, you know. I always have had that pressure on me, you know. So no regrets. You know, I'm here and it's a new start for me and I'm very excited and I'm looking forward to revisiting all of those wonderful cities and towns all over the world and meeting the fans again and making some great shows. And we all want it. I mean, all of the bands want it. We want to get back out there and do what we do best.
And I do know you love the road, so I'm assuming you cannot wait to get out there, do festivals and do all the things that you wanted to do, you know, the last so many years in Priest and all that good stuff.
I'm determined to be a good boy this time and be more of the tourist and try to take in more of every city everywhere, you know, because I do like, you know, history and architecture and stuff like that. But it's been such a whirlwind in the past. I'm determined to get out there now and really be the anorak, you know, and wherever I have to see, you know, what he, you know, check out the history of each place. I mean, more than I did, you know, less of the rock and roll this time, more of the anorak, you know, with the camera and stuff that like that. I guess it's that time of life, guys. I'm here.
After reading the book, I think you're going to last about a week taking photos and then you'll fall right back into KK Downing.
I'm afraid of that. But we'll see what happens, you know, but I'm looking forward to it, which, you know, whichever route, make a nice mixture would be good. I'm sure that'll be the case.
There you go. Well, guys, KK's Priest, Sermons of the Sinner, out August 20th. And KK, man, so glad to talk to you. And it's been an honor.
Josh, big thanks for taking the time out to read the book, you know. And thank you very much for having me on the show. And like all I can say is, everyone, you know, travel safe, stay safe until I see you next in your town.
Thank you, KK. Have a great day.
Thank you, Josh. Take care, buddy.
Thank you to KK Downing of KK's Priest for coming on the show. He was an absolute pleasure to talk to. I could sit and listened to him tell stories for days and days. So much fun to have on the show. New KK's Priest Sermons of the Center out August 20th. Check me out at ToomeyToomey, at TalkToomeyTalk, Facebook.com/TalkToomeyTalk. You can send an email to TalkToomeyTalk@gmail.com. And make sure, as always, to head over to KnotFest.com and become an exclusive member of the KnotFest community. So for KnotFest.com, for Talk To Me, I've been Joshua Toomey, and I will talk to you guys next week.